Welcome to the deep dive. Ever looked at a drug name and just, felt completely lost, like it's just a jumble of letters?
Oh, absolutely. Happens all the time. Pharmacology can feel like this huge mountain of information.
But those names, they aren't random. They're actually like little codes.
Exactly. And we've been digging into the pharmacology research you sent over, looking for the patterns.
So today, we're basically handing you the key to unlock those codes.
That's the plan. Our mission here is to show you how to look at a drug's ending the suffix, or sometimes the prefix, and immediately get, three crucial things.
Okay, what are they?
First, the drug class. Second, how it works. That's the mechanism of action, or MOA. And third, the single most critical safety point, the thing you absolutely have to watch out for.
Right. So we're skipping the dense textbook approach. We're organizing all this information by body system, by what the drugs actually do.
It makes it much more practical.
Yeah. So by the end of this deep dive, the idea is you'll be able to like translate a drug name into its main job and instantly know, okay, what vital sign or maybe what lab value needs watching.
It's the ultimate shortcut, really, to being properly informed without drowning in detail.
Okay, let's get into it. Where do we start?
Let's unpack this, starting with a really core system, cardiovascular, managing the heart and blood vessels. And here, those suffixes are like bright flashing lights for blood pressure drugs.
Gotcha. And the first family, the really common one, beta blockers, they've got that distinctive ending.
Or sometimes just lol, like metoprolol, atenolol.
Right. Ol. So what's their main job? How do they work?
Okay, so their core function, the MOA, is blocking the effect of epinephrine,
Right.
adrenaline right at the receptor site.
So epinephrine is like the gas pedal for the heart.
Exactly. And beta blockers basically wedge something under that pedal. They slow the heart rate, drop the blood pressure. Pretty straightforward effect, actually.
Seems simple. But here's where the warnings come in, right? The critical safety stuff.
Yes. Because they block adrenaline effects kind of broadly, you get predictable side effects like low blood pressure, hypotension, and a slow heart rate, bradycardia, also sometimes low blood sugar, hypoglycemia.
Okay, but wait. It's a heart drug. Why is the biggest, like, absolute warning related to breathing?
That is the crucial detail. They can cause bronchospasm, tightening of the airways,
Which,
which
yeah.
means they are absolutely contraindicated for anyone with asthma. Full stop.
Wow. Okay, so never give an Olol to someone with asthma.
Never. And you must monitor their blood pressure, pulse, and glucose levels really closely.
Okay, noted. Moving on to another huge player in blood pressure management, the ACE inhibitors, the ones ending in
Right, like lisinopril, enalapril.
the central drugs. What's their angle? How do they lower blood pressure?
Well, their mechanism is interesting. They stop the body from converting angiotensin I into angiotensin the second.
Okay, chemistry aside, what does angiotensin the second do?
Think of angiotensin the second as the body's natural squeeze mechanism for blood vessels. It tightens things up, raises pressure. ACE inhibitors block the creation of that powerful squeezer.
So less squeeze, lower pressure. Makes sense.
Exactly.
But these Caprol drugs have some really specific kind of notorious side effects, don't they? The ones that always catch people off guard.
They absolutely do. There are three classic ones you have to know for EPRIL drugs. First, a really annoying, dry, persistent cough.
The cough.
Second, and this one's serious, is angioedema. That's rapid swelling, usually lips, tongue, throat, can be life-threatening.
Okay, well, and the third.
And third, a potentially dangerous increase in potassium levels, hyperkalemia.
Ah, the potassium. That sounds like the emergency monitoring point.
It really is. For nursing, you absolutely must monitor the patient's potassium levels, along with their heart rate and blood pressure, of course.
Got it. Potassium check for the bupropions. Okay, what's next in the cardiovascular lineup?
Next up, let's talk calcium channel blockers. These are a bit more diverse in their endings. You'll see letipine, like imlatipine, amyl, like verapamil, and zem, like diltiazem.
Bupine, amyl, zem. Okay. But they all work the same way.
Broadly, yes. They lower blood pressure by blocking calcium from moving across the muscle cell membranes in the heart and blood vessels.
Less calcium means.
Less forceful contraction,
Right.
weaker squeeze in the heart muscle and relaxation in the blood vessel walls.
Okay. And the key side effect here, what do we need to warn patients about?
The big one is orthostatic hypotension, that dizziness you can get when you stand up too quickly.
Right. And just, for the listener, why is telling someone to change position slowly so important with these drugs?
Because that sudden drop in blood pressure when they go from lying down or sitting to standing up can genuinely cause a fall. It's a major safety issue.
So serious fall risk. Patient education is key.
Absolutely. They have to learn to pause, dangle their feet, Then stand up slowly every single time.
Perfect. Okay. Two more key cardiovascular groups to touch on. First, the statins. Easy to spot. Any statins. They're all about lowering that bad cholesterol, LDL.
Right. Cholesterol busters. Their mechanism is a bit technical. They inhibit an enzyme called HMG-CoA reductase.
Okay, let's simplify HMG-CoA reductase. Think of it like...
like the factory manager for making LDL cholesterol. Statins basically fire that manager.
Okay, fired manager, less LDL production. Got it. Makes it stickier. But what's the main safety concern with statins?
The critical one is myopathy. That means significant muscle pain or weakness.
And this isn't just mild soreness, right?
No, not at all. You need to tell patients, if you feel so weak you can barely climb stairs, that's a red flag. Report it immediately.
And there's another contraindication.
Yes, a big one. Statins are strictly contraindicated in patients who already have liver disease, so monitoring liver function tests is absolutely essential.
Liver check for statins.
Okay.
And finally, in the CV section, the clot busters, thrombolytics, often ending in ACE or taralanquils.
Like Alteplaz or Reteplaz. Their job, their MOA, is dissolving existing clots. They do this by activating something called plasminogen, which then forms plasmin, the actual clot-dissolving enzyme.
Makes sense. If you're giving a drug designed to dissolve clots...
the number one risk is pretty obvious, isn't it?
Bleeding.
Exactly. Bleeding. You have to watch carefully for any signs of hemorrhage, internal or external, and constantly monitor their coagulation studies, their clotting times.
So it's a trade-off. Bust the dangerous clot, but watch like a hawk for bleeding elsewhere.
Precisely. It's a high-stakes balancing act.
Wow, okay. It's kind of amazing how quickly we went from just managing blood pressure to needing to watch the liver, muscles, clotting factor.
That shows how interconnected everything is.
Absolutely. So that wraps up the cardiovascular system focus. Now we're shifting gears a bit.
Yeah, and it's a deliberate shift. When we move into pain management, analgesics, and fighting infections, anti-infectives, the big theme becomes toxicity. The danger moves more internally to the patient's organs.
Right. This next section is really about identifying which organ is most at risk with which drug class. Let's start with the big four analgesics. First up, acetaminophen. Usually has acetaminophen right in the name. Pain and fever relief. Where's the danger zone?
The primary risk, the big one, is hepatotoxicity, liver damage. Acetaminophen can be really rough on the liver, especially if someone takes too much.
Okay, liver damage. This can be really serious, even fatal in overdose. So what's the crucial reversal agent? The antidote.
Everyone needs to know this one. Acetylcysteine. That's the specific antidote for acetaminophen overdose.
Acetylcysteine for acetaminophen.
Wow.
Got it. Okay, next analgesic group. NSAIDs. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, often ending in aprofen, like ibuprofen. They handle pain, inflammation, fever. If acetaminophen hits the liver, where do NSAIDs tend to cause problems, especially long-term?
With chronic use, the primary risk for NSAIDs shifts to the kidneys. They can be nephrotoxic, kidney damage.
Kidneys for NSAIDs, okay. And we can't forget aspirin. It's kind of unique, isn't it?
It is. Its MOA reduces pain and inflammation like other NSAIDs, but it's also strongly antiplatelet. It stops platelets from sticking together, so it thins the blood.
Which leads to a specific contraindication.
Right. Critically, aspirin should not be given to children or teenagers, particularly with viral illnesses, because of the risk of Reye's syndrome and, of course, the increased bleeding risk.
No aspirin for kids. Ooh. Clear rule. And finally, the heavy hitters for pain. Opioids. Often ending in MYR1 like hydrocodone or Maladon like methadone. We know about side effects like constipation, but what's the number one life-threatening risk?
Always, always respiratory depression.
They slow down breathing too much.
Exactly. The patient can literally stop breathing. It's the absolute top priority for monitoring when someone's on opioids.
And like acetaminophen, there's a crucial antidote here too.
Yes, absolutely vital. Naloxone, sometimes known by the brand name Narcan. It rapidly reverses opioid overdose effects.
Naloxone for opioids. Okay, good. Let's switch over to the anti-infectives, the antibiotics.
Yeah.
Starting with the ones that attack the bacterial cell wall and where allergies are a big concern. That's penicillin, ending in acetylcholine and cephalosporins. Starting with CEF or CEPH.
Right. Both work by messing up the bacteria's ability to build or maintain its cell wall. Kills the bacteria that way.
And penicillin is famous for allergies.
Exactly. So the number one nursing consideration for both these classes, penicillins and cephalosporins, is getting a thorough allergy history. Is the patient allergic to penicillin? It's the first question you ask. There can be cross-reactivity.
Good point about cross-reactivity. What about cephalosporins specifically? Any additional risks beyond potential allergy?
They do carry a couple more flags. They also have risks of nephrotoxicity, kidney damage again, and super infections like C. diff colitis. So you need that broader monitoring.
Okay. Now let's look at some other major antibiotic classes, focusing on toxicity and sun sensitivity.
Yeah, photosensitivity is a big one for the next two groups. Quinolones, ending in loxacin, like ciprofloxacin, and sulfonamides, often starting with like sulfamethoxazole.
How do they work, generally?
They both interfere with bacterial replication or essential processes in different ways. But the shared practical point for patients is that they both cause photosensitivity.
Meaning
patients are much more susceptible to sunburn. You absolutely must educate them that using sunscreen, wearing protective clothing, avoiding midday sun, it's mandatory while taking these drugs.
Okay, easy to forget that one. Use sunscreen with floxacin and sulf drugs. But the quinolones, the floxacins, they have a really weird specific warning, don't they? Seems totally unrelated to infection.
It does seem odd, but it's critical. Quinolones carry a specific risk of tendonitis, inflammation of the tendons, and even tendon rupture.
Wow. Which tendon?
The Achilles tendon at the back of the ankle is particularly vulnerable. It's a shocking side effect for an antibiotic, but it's real and needs immediate attention if symptoms like heel pain occur.
Tendon rupture with floxacins. Okay, memorable. Another one with a unique warning is tetracycline, ending no cycline. Inhibits protein synthesis in bacteria. What's the big caution here?
This is a major pediatric warning. Do not give tetracycline to children under the age of 8.
Why not?
Because it can bind to calcium in developing teeth and cause permanent staining, like a grayish discoloration.
Permanent tooth staining under 8. Okay. And the last antibiotic group for today, aminoglycosides. Recognized by the suffix mycin, like gentamicin or tobramycin, these also inhibit bacterial protein synthesis, but they carry like a double whammy of toxicity, right?
They really do. Ototoxicity, hearing damage, and nephrotoxicity, kidney damage, both are serious risks.
Hearing and kidney damage, so the nursing actions are.
Strict monitoring of kidney function, BUN, creatinine, and liver function, too. And critically, educate the patient to report any tinnitus ringing in the ears immediately. That could be the first sign of irreversible hearing loss.
Report ringing in the ears with protmycin.
Got it. Wow, lots of potential organ damage with antibiotics. It's why they require careful use and monitoring.
Definitely. Okay, we spent a lot of time on toxicity, which is vital. But now let's shift focus again to the GI, gastrointestinal, and neurological drug classes. Here, the emphasis moves a bit away from organ damage and more towards practical issues like absorption timing and patient alertness.
Exactly. Good transition. Starting with the stomach, acid reduction. The big players are the proton pump inhibitors, PPIs. They end in bactrimazole, omeprazole, pantoprazole.
Pantoprazole for acid. Their job is suppressing stomach acid, right? Hydrochloric acid.
Yep. They block the pump that secretes the acid. Very effective.
And the key practical point here. The thing patients often get wrong.
It's all about timing. PPIs must be taken before meals, usually 30, 60 minutes before breakfast. And also, the patient needs to know, do not crush or chew the tablets or capsules. They often have special coatings.
Right. Got to protect the drug so it works where it's supposed to. Take ketazole before food, swallow whole. Okay. What about the other main acid reducers?
Those are the H2 receptor antagonists. You'll see endings like nudine or nodidine. Think cimetidine, famotidine.
Nodidine, also for acid. How do they work?
They block the action of histamine on specific receptors in the stomach lining. Histamine normally signals acid production, so blocking it reduces acid.
Okay. And is there a key interaction we need to be aware of with this class?
Yes, there is. Antacids, things like Tums or Mylanta, can actually decrease the absorption of the H2 blockers, especially cimetidine.
So taking an antacid at the same time might make your nonantiid drug less effective.
Exactly. You need to space them out. It's a common mistake.
A good tip. Okay, finally, let's tackle the neurological system, focusing on two classes that heavily impact alertness, benzodiazepines and barbiturates.
Right. Sedatives and anti-anxiety meds, mostly. Benzodiazepines are recognizable by PAM or LAM endings. Diazepam, lorazepam, alprazolam.
PAM and LAM. Benzos. And barbiturates.
Barbiturates often end in no arbital, like phenobarbital or secobarbital. They're used less commonly now due to safety issues, but still important to know.
And how do both of these classes work? What's the shared mechanism?
Both of them essentially boost the effects of GABA. GABA is the brain's main inhibitory neurotransmitter. It calms things down.
So they're basically amplifying the brain's off switch or brake pedal.
That's a great way to put it. They enhance the calming effect of GABA.
Which leads, unsurprisingly, to shared side effects.
Yes. The big ones are sedation, drowsiness, and crucially, the potential for life-threatening respiratory depression, especially if mixed with other depressants like alcohol or opioids.
Okay, sedation and respiratory depression. Is there an antidote or reversal agent we need to know, like with opioids or acetaminophen?
There is, specifically for the benzodiazepines, the PAMs and LAMs. The reversal agent is flumazenil. It can rapidly reverse the sedative effects if someone has taken too much.
Flumazenil for benzos. Good safety net. And given the sedation, the patient education must be.
Absolutely clear. Extreme caution is needed. Because you're enhancing the brain's off switch, patients must avoid any activities that require alertness driving, operating machinery, anything like that.
The risk shifts from internal organ damage to immediate physical danger in their environment.
Exactly. It's a different kind of safety focus.
Wow. Okay, so looking back, we just powered through dozens of drugs that might have seemed like just random names before.
Yeah, but now, just by recognizing these simple patterns, these suffixes and prefixes, you can connect them to key risks and actions.
It really works. You see, Kishpreel, you instantly think, okay, blood pressure drug, watch the potassium.
Where you see Hami Sleinson in your brain flags. Hearing and kidney checks needed.
See, CAM or ALAM, you know it's about sedation to GABA, and you remember flumazenil is the antidote.
Exactly. Pharmacology is undeniably complex, no getting around that. But these patterns, they give you that rapid, almost automatic link to the drug's main job and the single most critical safety issue.
That's incredibly powerful knowledge to have right at your fingertips.
It really is. And it brings us back to something we touched on briefly. Remember we mentioned phenobarbital, one of the barbiturates? We noted it has a really narrow therapeutic range. That safe and effective level in the blood is tiny, just 10 to 40 micrograms per milliliter. Below that, it might not work. Above that, it gets toxic fast.
That's like walking a tightrope. Almost no room for error.
Precisely. Now, think about how many other drug classes we discussed today. The aminoglycosides, Belecin, the statins, even some antibiotics like cephalosporins that carry those warnings for potential liver or kidney toxicity.
Right. Lots of them mentioned organ damage risk.
So consider how critical that narrow window concept might be, even if not explicitly defined with a number range for many of these drugs. Every time you see a warning about potential organ damage, you're likely dealing with a drug where keeping it in the right zone is crucial. It underscores the constant need for monitoring, for watching how the body is handling the medication.
That's a really interesting point. Even if they don't all have strict levels like phenobarbital, the toxicity warnings imply a similar need for careful management.
Exactly. So now that you know the suffixes and the main risks, maybe think about which other classes we covered today might implicitly require that kind of careful therapeutic monitoring to keep patients safe. It adds another layer to understanding these patterns.